Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, a tale of spiritual communication, healing, miracles, and of course, a guide to your soul presence. Today, I am most delighted to welcome John Vespasian from the Netherlands, author of his newest book, Thriving in Difficult Times, 12 Lessons from Ancient Greece to Improve Your Life Today. Hello, John, and thank you for joining us today.
Hello, Cheryl. Thanks for having me on.
John, as listeners of Healing From Within are so well aware, my guests and I search the past and present, sharing experiences and new discoveries in order to better know the true nature of human and energetic life, so we may move through illusions, fears, and limitations to realize our true potential, to thrive and find happiness and prosperity. In today's episode of Healing From Within, John Vespasian, the author of 8 books on irrational philosophy, psychology, and personal development, including When Everything Fails, Try This, and Rational Living, Rational Working, How to Make Winning Moves When Things Are Falling Apart, and another book, Consistency, The Key to Permanent Stress Relief, will help us to explore ways to achieve positive results while not wasting time, finding resilience and using persistence and finding the key to self-reliance. John, I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and remember either a person, a place, or event that they remember, which may have shown a sign to their path in life or their destiny, as I believe even at an early age, the soul has a sense of knowing what they wish to pursue in this lifetime. So think back for a minute to an earlier time in your life.
Well, I can give you a very quick answer, and I'm very sure that in a way it shows what I will become later, because I remember very clearly when I was a kid, I was very fond of reading children's books by Enid Blyton, and she was a best-selling writer in the 1930s, 1940s, and I was reading those books in the 1970s, and they were still very popular. And they are characterized by having very strong heroes, children still, but with a lot of determination, a lot of courage, very much following their dreams. And I found the books remarkable. They're still in print today. And later on, when I learned about Enid Blyton, the writer, I learned that she was able to write actually one book per week. She was super productive.
Wow.
And 20 years after her death, children around the world were still writing fan letters to her, because during her prime, I mean, in her best years, she would just sit down and she would answer letters all day, and she would spend a couple of days per week answering letters. So she would get letters for children all around the world, and then she would just write her answer on the letter and send it back. And she did this for a decade. And then she became very, very famous and very, very productive. So, in a way, I remember clearly that when I was a kid, I thought, okay, these books are wonderful. Well, one day I will write books myself. And this was, in a way, premonition of what would I become later.
Look what a sensitive and curious kid you were. And she was reaching out to children just like you, who had a strong soul and spirit and were courageous and would follow their dreams. So that's a very interesting story. I like it very much. Tell us a common theme that runs through all your books and is most meaningful to you.
Well, the books are based on the idea that on the subject of rational living, which is an approach to personal development. It's a very simple idea. It basically says that if you try to remain calm, to remain logical when you're facing problems, when you're facing adversity, and to try to take rational decisions, usually you will do very well in the long term. The principle is simple. The application is extremely difficult. Because we human beings, we tend to panic, We tend to do stupid things when we become nervous, we become anxious, we become depressed. And the whole purpose of my books is to try to make readers, in a way, to try to make myself a little bit more rational. 1%, 2%, 5% more rational, to be able to think ahead better, to be able to focus on what's important, and to be able to let go of things that are less important. And I think this is a very challenging approach. It's very difficult to do. I analyze in my books dozens of examples from history about people who have made huge mistakes and people who had been able to overcome great difficulties, and try to draw from those cases, to try to draw
Yes.
principles of universal application.
Yes, the principles and qualities of people who are able to stay grounded or focused or calm, as you said before, in the middle of any calamity or tragedy. And if you can do that, everything passes and you're in a new moment in time and you can take it from there. You get don't get bogged down. Now, when you requested to be on this show, Healing from Within, I was very intrigued by your new book, Thriving in Difficult Times, 12 Lessons from Ancient Greece, because over the years I've had many coincidences and dreams and events, and I even felt a strong need to visit Greece, which I did, and I often have coincidences with my guests. So, how did you become interested in learning more about ancient Greece and writing this book?
Well, for many years I have been intrigued about what it means to be part of the Western culture. What we have in common, Europeans, Americans, Australians, we have this this appreciation of beauty, of proportion, of balance. This is the main characteristic of ancient Greece. When you start to look at the theater, the architecture, the way they live, I mean, the whole lifestyle, the diet, the whole the relationships between people in ancient Greece. You see this tendency towards balance, towards beauty, towards proportion. I was all very intrigued by this characteristic. So the whole purpose of the book is to investigate what made the ancient Greeks thrive for 10 centuries. It was a culture that survived and thrived for 10 centuries, while all the other cultures in the area, they were collapsing. The ancient Egyptians, eventually they collapsed. The Phoenicians, the Persians, one after the other, all those cultures, they were wiped out and they disappeared. And the Greeks continued to thrive. And to a large extent, what makes us Western cultures successful today is still because very much we are still like the ancient Greeks, huh?
Yes. I think so. I think self-investigation and knowing yourself were keys to their success, and also they found effective ways to get things done, especially in difficult times, because they had strong determination. That was one of the qualities that you talked about. And let us talk about for a minute one of the characters you talked about. In his history of the Peloponnesian Wars, Thucydides, you know who I'm talking about,
Yeah, to see this, yeah.
yes, mentions, he talks about war. He talks about the court that they had that had to decide whether to go to war. And we're living in very tumultuous times right now across our world. There is war in so many places. So how might we use some of the philosophy of the Greeks in relationship to how we should determine or use our
Well,
government or our assemblies to decide what's important and what's not important?
Thucydides, he wrote his History of the Peloponnesian War immediately after the war. I mean, he never finished the book because he died when the book was already 90%. But anyway, you can see he spent almost 2 years reflecting on why actually there was a war between Athens and Sparta. Because the war basically destroyed ancient civilization. I mean, Greek continued still in the colonies, continued to be present in cultural life, in economic life, but basically the center was Athens, was completely destroyed, and
Yes.
basically all the and this was the tragedy was I would say a tragedy of great proportions for the whole ancient culture. And to see this actually reflected, and he wrote this book and said, how is it possible that this war could happen? And he went in great detail about the reasons of the war and said, if you look at the war, this conflict that went on for almost 6 years, and you see the reasons, he said, actually the reasons were stupid. I mean, people became very excited about some possible threats that actually never happened. They started to blown out of proportion little details. People became very upset, very stubborn, very aggressive, and eventually the war broke out for no reason, because the Athenians were afraid that the Spartans were going to attack. The Spartans were afraid that the Athenians were concluding agreements with other peoples and trying to surround them. So in the end, it was this mistrust, this great lack of dialogue between the two countries, and a little incident that happened along the border. Then the war broke out, people became completely hysterical, and the war was really very cruel, without quarter. They would burn down the cities, they would kill the children, they would kill the women.
John, when you're talking, it sounds to me very much like what's going on in our world right now. And when we get to discuss the deadly mirage of continuity and that biblical systems are non-linear, we will understand what went on here with false thinking, with much false thinking by the people there that created that war, and it's still being done today. So tell us about the deadly mirage of the theory of continuity and biblical systems that are nonlinear.
Well, one of the great advantages of ancient Greece is that they were able to think in ways that were nonlinear. And this is a great contrast to our culture because, for instance, when we think about success, about health, about relationships, we tend to be very much mathematical. We want to have next year 5% more success than this year. We want to increase our income. We want to increase our health. And this kind of mathematical approach, linear approach, is very unrealistic. And the ancient Greeks, they knew very well from their youth, they were trained to understand that history, their ups and downs, from time to time they got invaded by the Persians, they have to fight sometimes, and they have years of great success and years of adversity. But they were very calm. And you see the ancient literature and the ancient theater of Greece, you see that people took these ups and downs very philosophically. They were never obsessed with success to the extent that we are today. They understood very much that human life is not linear. I mean, linearity is an exception. What is really the rule is that there are ups and downs, there are irregularities, there are non-linear effects. And they understood this very well. And this was implicit in the whole of Eastern Greek culture. And today, we are, I would say, convinced that things have to become continuously better, they have to be smooth, they have to be easy. And this is very unrealistic. And I think this kind of mentality drives many people into depression and anxiety.
Yes, absolutely. Because it is change that represents normality. Even if large people, numbers of people are stubborn about this and they demand to stay the same, we can't. The world is changing, and we, in each second, our bodies are changing and reality is changing. So we need to flow more easily with change and actually appreciate it because it brings us new opportunities to learn more and to be more joyful and positive in our life. So that is a very good. It's not we just showed people that what they think can continue can't always continue, and that is a realistic view. And even Hippocrates, you write about him, and I'm very interested in him. He was a Greek physician. And he gained numerous insights that have been later confirmed by modern science. So he didn't have modern tools nor the methodology to gather samples, but he did learn something about taking care of his patients. And what was that?
Well, Hippocrates, we don't know exactly if it was one person or it was a group of persons, because he wrote
Right.
so many books that it makes you think that it was a group of people. But anyway, the lessons are there. And he was, I think, the first physician in history to understand that you have to tailor the treatment to the individual and you have to be extremely flexible. And this is another contrast between ancient Greek approach to well-being and today's, because today we are very mathematical. You go to a physician and you say, okay, I have a headache, and he gives you 2 milligrams of this or 2 milligrams of that, and there you go, and you're supposed to recover exactly in 3 days. I mean, this kind of approach was completely unknown in ancient Greece, and Hippocrates was very much a physician of lifestyle. He would see his patients, he would talk to them, he would try to understand what is behind their sickness, and he would always prescribe very mild treatments. He would always prefer to tailor the treatment to the specific person, to the specific age, to the specific season of the year, so that people would be able to sustain a good lifestyle. It was not so much of having a shock treatment or say, okay, you have to take this for 5 days and there you go. No, he wanted to change the way people live, to change the lifestyle of their patients. And
Yes.
he was really amazing in this one, because he was always very flexible. He never gave absolutely strict treatments. He said it's much better to have a treatment which is not 100% correct, which is not 100% perfect, but still is sustainable. He always went for sustainability.
He was a holistic doctor, probably the first one. He saw the person as a complex organism of both energy and physical life. And I like this quote. I'd like our listeners to hear this. He said, Hippocrates, at the beginning of a sickness, it can be appropriate to use a strong medicine, but at its height, it is better to abstain from strong medicine and let the patient rest. What he was suggesting was the body has the power to heal itself, because we're very much more than the physical body. So I like that thought very much. In another chapter, you tell us about why Plato wrote about Atlantis. I'm also over many years of interviewing people, Atlantis has come up, and there's a lot to learn from the story of Atlantis. So tell us any interesting thoughts about Atlantis or Plato.
Well, the analysis I make about the story of Atlantis is to underline why Atlantis disappeared and why the Greeks continued to thrive. Because Atlantis, I mean, whether it was a real country or was a legend, in the end, Plato tells the story in his dialogue because he wants to really underline why the ancient Greeks were able to actually to overcome the Atlantis. Because the Atlantis were supposed to be very tall people, very intelligent, very strong. They were able to dominate all the other peoples in the Mediterranean, but still they disappeared. They disappeared, and the Greeks continued. Now, how did it happen? And the explanation that Plato gives in his writings is, I think, is very realistic. The Atlantic people, they live in this island. They were a very high culture. They have nice buildings. They have a very happy life, but they were concentrated in just one place. And they put all their assets together, and when the level of the sea rose 10 meters, they were wiped out, and the island disappeared, and the culture disappeared. While the Greeks, from the very beginning, they diversified. They started to open colonies, they opened trading posts all around the Mediterranean. And if they got problems in one area, and there were always problems in some area with the East or the West, or with the South, or with the Africans, when they have problems, they have all the rest of their network to use, and they never suffer hunger, they never suffer starvation, because they could always use their network and they could always use the diversification of their assets. And this is why Plato says the Greeks were very strong, because they were very diversified. They were always able to find resources in one way or another. By the Atlantis people, they were concentrated in one place, they put all their assets together, and they disappeared
Yeah.
very easily.
So Plato made it crystal clear. If you want to protect your life from disruptions, you need to take precautions, and you also need to diversify your risks. Spread your assets among the different territories. And that is the truth. I mean, they always say, don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? That's an
Yeah, okay, but
old saying.
I mean, this principle, they always sound like common sense when you see the story afterwards. But when you're in the middle of the story, it's very difficult. Because we human beings, we tend to follow our instincts sometimes, and we tend to say, okay, I'm going to keep everything together here because it's sort of close to home. And most of the time, this is a mistake. It's much better to diversify not only your finances, but also your relationships. When you have many friends, it's much better to have different types of friends. It's much better to have different types of
Absolutely.
interests. If you only know to do one thing in one place, you become extremely vulnerable.
Yes. So diversity is really a very good thing. Multicultural or multidimensional life, as it may exist beyond this place, is something to look into and not to be frightened by, but to embrace because there's much to be learned, right? We're always changing and learning. Now, it would appear that principles are more reliable than beliefs, and we certainly know that many beliefs have been imprinted in our minds over time, and many of them may be incorrect or not applicable to our lifestyle. So tell us how Aristotle explains something about this. He talks about cause and what cause means, and Plato tells us the universe is predictable. So what are we to
Yes,
think about this?
well, the ancient Greeks, they were very practical people. Even I would say even more practical than we are today, because they have to deal with a huge amount of problems with very little knowledge. I mean, we have a huge amount of technology today. Even if you go to a poor country, you still have smartphones and you have internet and you have all this kind of stuff. But the Greeks, they have very basic technology, so they have to figure out very quickly how to solve problems in a way that was practical and feasible and quick. And when we see all these great philosophers of antiquity, Plato, Socrates, Aristotle, we have an idea that you get in school, which is very much unrealistic, because these people were very practical teachers. I mean, they developed high philosophy, they developed epistemology and concepts and very complicated technical stuff, but most of the time they made their living by teaching people principles, practical principles to improve their lives. And they were very much focused on teaching people how to be good speakers, how to be convincing, how to develop good relationships, how to be happy, because Aristotle wrote extensively about happiness. And this is why they always wanted to focus on principles. They were very much distrustful of the beliefs, because they have to deal with other peoples in the area, with the Egyptians, with the Persians, that were completely different cultures. They have different languages, they have different gods, they have different religions, different rituals. And the Greeks were always very flexible about the beliefs and say, look, let's find a way to do business. Even these people believe something else, so they have completely different ideas. Let's find a way to deal with them in a business objective manner, but let's try to apply principles to our lives that make sense. And the whole purpose of ancient philosophy and ancient theater, in particular, when you see all this beautiful theater from Euripides and these ancient playwrights, they are trying to teach people principles to live good lives.
Yeah,
And they live.
I think they're trying to teach honesty and devotion and love and compassion and not beliefs, not thoughts that might not work out, but actually from what comes within, goodness. And they had a great quality of life in theater, as you say, in medicine. A lot of great thinkers came from that time, and they were not only practical, but they were creative. They always were looking for new ways to grow, right? And not be restricted and limited in their thinking. So that's very valuable. John, as a conscious being, which you are, interested in helping others achieve rationality, sensibility, and a higher state of consciousness, what concerns you about today's challenging worldwide situations and disturbances, and how can we begin to heal or deal with it all?
Well, the piece of advice that I always repeat over and over again is that you have to take some distance, because the problem, we have so many inputs from social media and news and all stuff that people get extremely short-term oriented. They get nervous because, oh, this is going to happen, and then I'm going to lose my job, or I'm going to lose my savings. And did you get this continuous pressure? Which most of the time can be easily avoided if you just take a bit of distance and you look at things at the big picture. And most of the things that make people depressed or worried or anxious, they are things that will never happen. And it's just that I mean, if you watch the news, the business of news is basically making things very sensational, and sometimes it's scaring people unnecessarily because you get a higher rating. And you have to take a bit of distance of all this, otherwise you go crazy. And this is very easy to say, very difficult to do, because it's so nice to spend your time looking at Twitter or whatever it is. But you have to take some distance, because otherwise you lose control of your life, you become extremely emotional, and you will make mistake after mistake.
I like your saying that. It is true. It's time to take some distance and be quiet within ourselves and in the silence, listen to our own perceptions and thoughts and value our own thoughts and pull away from some of the nonsense that we're seeing and hearing. And John, you wrote, and I'd like our listeners to hear this. It seems that the ancient Greeks demonstrated that learning to cope calmly and effectively with adversity is one of the keys to success and happiness. You have to accept that your expectations might be proven wrong and that some of your endeavors may fail despite your enthusiasm and hard work. Sometimes people will oppose you and block your initiatives for no good reason. On other occasions, unexpected circumstances might derail your plans and prevent you from getting what you want. Non-linearity is disruptive and unpleasant, but statistically common. What made the ancient Greeks resilient to adversity was the conviction that they could overcome all sorts of obstacles by employing their creativity, determination, and persistence. And that's what you talk about, some of the qualities that are necessary to get through any of the challenges that we have. What would you like the readers to take away with them after reading Thriving in Difficult Times?
Well, if you just take one idea from the book, you have to realize that sometimes the changes are obvious but difficult to see. And from Plato, you see in many of his writings, when people ask him, okay, what do I have to do? I have so many problems, I cannot improve my career. And then he gave always a practical advice. Say, look, the first thing you have to consider if you're in the right place. And this is something that people don't want to hear. But sometimes, as Plato said already 25 centuries ago, he said, if you are born in a small city and there are no opportunities and you want to develop a career, which is difficult because the market, you need a wide market, you're in the wrong place. Or if you are in a place where people are very stubborn and very narrow-minded, sometimes you have to move. And it's not always the reason for the problem, but very often is. And then when people are stuck financially in their profession, sometimes in their romantic aspirations, they say, okay, I cannot get what I want because it's very difficult. Sometimes you just have to move. And this seems pretty obvious when you look at it in perspective, but when you're in the middle of the story, it's very difficult to see because we all want to be comfortable. We don't want to have disruptions. We want to keep our own things together. And sometimes the solution is just you have to open your eyes. And the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, move very often. And when they didn't have a good crop in Athens, they would go to Corinth, they would go to the Mediterranean, they would go to Egypt, they would go to Alexandria, and they would just move because there were better opportunities. And this is something that many people don't want to hear, and this is a reason for very much unnecessary misery.
So we're going to say to our listeners, be open to change. It's not a bad thing. And be ready to move out of your comfort zone because miracles are waiting for you to find if you can just do something like that. So I want to thank you, John Vespasian, for a very creative and unique way to study human development through the ancient cultures, philosophies, and so many challenges of those times. Now, to find a way for human rationality, prioritizing problems, and ways to produce real and lasting solutions, you can find much about that in this book, Thriving in Difficult Times. So you may find more about this at johnvespasian.blogspot.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing from Within, we have taken a journey into the past, visiting with fine thinkers, and have found whatever culture or country we explore, people simply need to find a realistic view of human nature, their purpose for living a physical life, and the way to balance their thoughts and lifestyles to minimize problems and work on positive values and meaningful solutions or principles. As John writes, history recounts the same tale again and again. When difficulties arise, skepticism turns into discouragement and irrationality into fear. Pragmatism leads to counterproductive actions and confusing results. Without a long-term perspective, problems soon strike the ship under the waterline. A full human life is impossible without thoughtfulness. This principle is universal. It knows no exceptions. No one can escape it. Learn from experience, abandon wishful thinking, and embrace a philosophy that works. Rationality, determination, and consistency are the essential factors of happiness and prosperity. Let them carry the day. John and I would have you remember that aligning to your own inner spiritual wisdom and knowing yourself every day a little bit better is the way to find contentment with your choices and to bring into your energy field that which you discover most important to your own heart values. The giving and receiving of love is also a universal factor and one we were born to discover. Understanding that change is inevitable and life is non-linear offers us the way to respond with grace and good sense to all challenges. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, and invite you to my website, CherylGlick.com, to listen to creative, imaginative, and interpretive thinkers of science, history, medicine, education, and the arts find both new and ancient ways to understand life in its many dimensional possibilities. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you for listening.